24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can't do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked. Keep it locked. Keep it locked.
Keep it locked. Do you believe insurance companies overcharge you? Do you believe that you pay enough monthly and you should not have to pay a deductible when the coverage is needed? Unfortunately, deductibles are real, and we at We Pay All Your Deductibles offer you a warranty for about 1.5% monthly of the cost of your deductible to pay your deductible when you need it. We give back 25% back every 2 years if the time never arises. Sign up for our warranty, and you will have one up on the high cost of insurance on your cars, homes, motorcycles, cell phones, and boats. We pay all your deductibles.
Millionaire Mentorship. Millionaire Mentorship. The Millionaire Mentorship Show with Dr. Herbert Harris on Bashani Radio and iHeart Radio.
You are now tuned in to the Millionaire Mentorship Show with Dr. Herbert Harris on Bashani Radio. Always talking about everything from New York City. We are available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and anywhere a mobile device is available. This is Dr. Herbert Harris, author of The 12 Universal Laws of Success. I am your transformational speaker and trainer. We've written 8 books, had our books translated into many languages, but we are now engaged in transforming the lives of 10 million people, helping them to be what they want to be, do what they want to do, and have whatever they want to have. The concept of the Millionaire Mentorship Show is that wealth, success, and all things come to us based on consciousness. The spiritual principle is, seek first the kingdom, and all these things will be added unto you. Kingdom is consciousness, awareness. The purpose of the Millionaire Mentorship Show is to help you develop the awareness and consciousness of wealth, health, success, prosperity, and money, and to attract these things into your life. So, if you want to attract health, wealth, happiness, love, success, prosperity, and money into your life, you are in the right place. I would also like to thank our listeners for making the Millionaire Mentorship Show the number one program on the Bashani Radio Network, with over 2 million listeners. With listeners like you, nothing is impossible. So keep up the good works, folks. If we keep on listening, sharing, and subscribing, and we'll rise together to greater heights. Send your questions and comments to Herbert at herbertharris.com, and I'd love to share some of them on the air. Everyone who sends in a comment or a question will receive a free audio download of The 4 Principles of Wealth Building. You can also schedule a free Millionaire Mentorship consultation where I will help you do you. This is Dr. Herbert Harris. If you would like more information about how you may become a millionaire, text the word millionaire, that's M-I-L-L-I-O-N-A-I-R-E, to 58885. That's 5-888-5 to get more information and a special gift.
Our guest today is the distinguished author, scholar, entrepreneur, educator, the doctorate in education, Dr. Claude Anderson, was the state coordinator of education for the state of Florida under Governor Askew. He was appointed by Jimmy Carter to the position of, Assistant Secretary of the United States Department of Commerce, and he directed economic development projects that created jobs and businesses in the southeastern states. As an entrepreneur, Dr. Anderson has owned radio stations, retail food outlets, and residential construction. He developed Waterland Fisheries, one of the largest aquacultural facilities in the United States, which produces over 1 million pounds of live, high-quality fish annually. Dr. Anderson is the president of the Harvest Institute, a nationally recognized think tank that does research, policy development, education, and advocacy to increase the competitiveness of Black Americans. He maintains an active speaking engagement schedule in schools, universities, and corporations around the world. Dr. Anderson is most famous because he's written numerous best-selling books, including Black Labor, White Wealth, Powernomics, Dirty Little Secrets, More Dirty Little Secrets, and A Black History Reader, 101 Questions You Never Thought to Ask. So welcome to the Millionaire Mentorship Show, Dr. Anderson.
Well, I'm glad to be with you, I guess to make contact with anybody in Detroit, now that you all have been being gentrified up there, I hope you all can still see sunlight and get air up there.
Well, you know, Doc, I think this gentrification is happening everywhere. I'm in Wilmington, North Carolina, and every time I look up, another house on the block goes to, we'll just call it other.
Well, that's happening all over the country. And Matt, I'm right here in Washington, D.C. When I first came to Washington, D.C. in 1976 with President Carter, that time the Washington, D.C. was known as Chocolate City. It was 78% Black. It's down to about 40% now. Mm. They it's no longer Chocolate City. Over in P.G. County, the adjoining county, that was one of the biggest opportunities for increasing and elevating Black folk in the country. They had the highest concentration of Black educated Blacks and Black wealth in America in PG County. That's being gentrified. Detroit's being gentrified. Everything, right? I got a call yesterday. St. Louis, is being gentrified. The last district in LA is being gentrified right now, Crenshaw District. Because when I was a kid, in California, we had Black cities there. We had Compton, Inglewood, Watts, and inner city. And now those gone to Hispanics. Blacks are getting wiped out because they don't have any leadership.
Wow. Well, you know, Doc, that is something, as you say, you have kind of predicted it. You saw the trend happening. You know, before we really get into the meat of our discussion today, I always like to ask about, you know, your childhood, where you came from, your early years. How did you become who you are?
I am what I am based on some things. First of all, because in the earlier years of my life, I understood the nature of racism in America. When I learned that at a very early age, that because of the racism in the South, South Carolina, my mother only got as far as the fifth grade in education. My daddy never got far as the third grade. And I buried my two aunt and aunt and a grandmother. And what my grandmother told me on her 99th birthday, I said, "What do you want for your birthday?" She said, "How do you feel?" She said, "The body is strong, the mind is strong, but the body is weak." I said, "What would you like for your birthday?" She said, "I would like to see the inside of a school before I die." And so I had to go cut a deal with the teacher. I asked the teacher, she could come sit with me in classrooms for the first couple of days. Wow. I learned about the nature of racism in education. I learned that in the South, the problem was that Blacks didn't own or control anything. And I'm giving you a long answer to make it.
No, that's okay, Doc. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. When I was on a Saturday morning, I would go uptown and I learned about immigration. And I'd go past, they had in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, they had a POW camp there for German prisoners. They had captured 278 German prisoners in a submarine that was destroyed off the coast of North Carolina. They brought those prisoners into Winston-Salem and put them in a POW camp about 2 miles from my house where I lived in Winston-Salem. I used to go by there on a Saturday morning, going downtown, and at a very early age, 8, 9 years of age. And those German prisoners would be leaning on the fence and giving us the finger, we go by as young kids, they'd give us the finger, drop their pants and pat their butts. And we go downtown. We go downtown, and guess what? There's the Germans sitting up in the best restaurants and going to the movie theater with whites. They can get out of camp on a release basis on the weekend and go live with whites. These are German prisoners. At the same time, American boys in World War II fighting and dying. I learned that there's an immigration policy in this country that's totally against black folk. I can go on and on, but I learned early what racism was. Racism is a competitive relationship between groups of people that are competing to survive and thrive. And black folk right now are being buried under immigration policy in this country because you got no black leadership. And then all these immigrants coming to this country, they're being subsidized by the Democratic Party and by the black overclass, which is in violation of the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment, and the civil rights laws of 1860.
Wow. Well, Doc, you figured it out at an early age. It's interesting, though, coming up in that era, was there any particular person that sort of set you in the direction now that you've ended up? Any person that sort of gave you that insight to make that pivot to speak truth to power?
Well, the biggest thing, I guess, was just my mother, because she struggled every day to make a living for us. Because my daddy was an alcoholic at that time, most of the time he would go out and drink and lose his money. But my mother had to go out and sell flowers. She made paper flowers she sold on the corners on holidays. And she made sweet potato pies and made the best sweet potato pies in the damn city. People come by. So we had to live off of what she made from selling pies and selling flowers. I learned then the importance of money, getting some money. So what I did, to make a long story short for you again, I then, to try to help her, I started raising chickens. I went out and I got some little biddies at Easter time. I raised them. So pretty soon I raised as many as 18, 27 chickens and built a fence. Then I also got me a paper route. So in the morning, I had to get up with my brother and go carry papers at 5 o'clock in the morning, come back home. This is before school, go out and feed my chickens. And then on Friday and Saturday, I had to carry wood. I was paid 25 cents on a Friday and 50 cents on a Saturday for carrying wood. And on top of that, I wound up getting a job at the grocery store. So by the time I was 14, I was working 4 or 5 damn jobs just trying to get my mother.
Wow. Now, that's a lesson that, you know, when we do our program, that our young people have missed that whole chapter, that somehow many of them don't understand not just the value of work, but what you become by doing what you did. That was a part of the molding of that became Dr. Claude Anderson.
Right. And see, later on, when I got into the service, one of the first things I said, I got in the service, and my cousin was one of the first black Marines. And he was a warrant officer then. I asked him, I said, what should I do when I get in the Marine Corps? He said, what's your status? I said, well, they gave me 135 IQ. So they said that I can be whatever I want to be. What should I pick? And he said, well, pick the most expensive thing that the Marine Corps has. The most expensive thing was aviation, because it only cost the government about $300 to make a black cook and about $500 to produce a black mechanic, but it cost them $150,000 to produce an aviator. I said, I'm going into aviation. And because of that, the Marine Corps says, you got the IQ, you can be whatever you want to be. You can go in any, you can go, you, whatever you want, the Marine Corps will send you into it. So they sent me to all kinds of experiences, even when they were doing offshore experiments and rocket propellants, using oxygen as a rocket propellant back in North Island Naval Air Station. That time, that was a great secret. That was before they sent up missiles for Sputnik, and we're not what they sent up for these missiles for NASA. So they sent me every place I wanted to go.
Wow. Okay. Well, Doc, you know, you were talking a little, I noticed in reading your bio, you've been active in politics. And, you know, what do you think that the role right now, say, of our black political leaders, how are they doing right now?
Well, first of all, let me go back and correct you a second. You don't have any black political leaders. You got some blacks, the visible blacks. Those are not leaders. that defeats the definition. A leader is an individual who's done a very critical examination, comprehensive examination of a people or a group's conditions, and then it's drafted how-to conditions and strategies, cookbooks, recipes for taking them to a better place or a better quality of life. You haven't got any black visible blacks right now that have done that for black folk. So don't call them black leaders. That's an insult to them. You got a lot of visible blacks. And that's the biggest problem you got in America right now, because I got millions of blacks across America that hear me every day, all week. I make contact with 2 to 3 million blacks a week. And that's what all my books are for, to show them what they should be doing and how to go about doing it. But we have not progressed that far because we have no black leadership. We have no black leadership in America, no black organizations. Why do I say that in politics? Because what you got is that they defeat the purpose of politics. Politics is a process, Herbert, that says that defines who's going to get what benefits out of life. It came into existence in the 1500s. Politics is based on a very simple premise of quid pro quo, something for something. One hand washes the other. You take care of me, I'll take care of you. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. If I vote for you and you go into office, you owe me. We haven't got one black elected official now that's in the office that is practicing quid pro strategies with black folk. Black folk have been giving every politician their votes and demanding get nothing in return. That's why I did a study in your city in Detroit. Mm-hmm. I did a study in 1960 right there in Detroit. I looked at the conditions of black folk and did a qualitative study. That means in terms of welfare, food stamps, public housing, crime. And at that point in time, you only had 103 black elected officials in the entire United States. I looked at the discomfort indicators and saw that black folk were suffering in 1960. Then I did the same study in 1990, 30 years later, to see if the conditions had changed. I used the same qualitative measures, discomfort indicators. And guess what? By 1990, the number of black elected officials had gone up from 103, it had gone up to over 9,000. And I looked at the condition of black folk. After a 9,000% increase in the number of black elected officials, black folk conditions didn't improve. They went backwards. They reversed. Black folk were worse off in 1990 in discomfort than they were in 1960, even though they had a 9,000% increase. They did that because there's no connection between putting a black person in office, in a political office, and black people getting benefits. That's your problem. We have no black leadership is sold out after the civil rights movement. They gave in and surrendered to racism, and now they joined the political correctness group. Your black organizations like the NAACP and Urban League, they don't do a damn thing for black folk. They have no leadership. That's the problem. I can't beat up on the poor blacks for not moving ahead. It's that they've been sold out by the visible leaders, what I call the black overclass and the black elected officials.
Wow. You know, that's a powerful reality. In other words, when you look from 103 to 9,000, you would think that, man, the world would be at our footsteps and nothing has changed. We've actually gone backwards. That's some serious stuff, Doc.
Right. And when you went backwards and see that, and that was the purpose of the civil rights movement, was to help enable you to go backwards. See, because the civil rights movement was never, never, never on the right track. See, the whole person, the civil rights movement in 1960 should have been one simple thing. That is, try to reverse the purpose of slavery. What was the purpose of slavery? The purpose of slavery was to maldistribute at almost 100% of all the resources in this country into away from black folk. So slavery maldistributed 100% of this nation's land, materials, resources, businesses, income, privileges, rights, and controls of all levels of government to the hands of the dominant white society. That's what the civil rights movement should have been about, correcting what slavery had done to black folk. But instead, they went the other way and said, well, we don't mind what's happened to us, just as long as we can be acceptable and get along with it. We can go to their schools, go in their community, marry their women, sit in their movie theaters, go to their restaurant. We'll be happy even if we're in the same damn position we're in when we're in slavery or semi-slavery, called Jim Crow segregation. They never corrected the maldistribution that occurred during slavery and Jim Crow segregation.
Wow, Doc. You know, I was looking in your book, The Black History Reader, and you were really sharing that race has really been a fundamental part, even in the creation of this nation. When they were, the founding fathers were dealing with the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, race seemed to be an integral part of that. In fact, from a reading of what I was reading, some of your writing, if the racial issue had been put into play, there might not be a United States of America. Maybe you could speak a little on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, because racism never existed, Herbert. Racism never existed. Contrary to what you hear, that BS you hear on the Fox Channel, racism never existed on this earth until about the 1400s. See, in about 1445, when Henry the Navigator picked up about 15 blacks or 16 blacks off the coast of Africa and took them back to Italy and gave them to the Pope. The Pope used them as slaves in the Vatican from about 1445 all the way up to about 1488. At that point in time, he put out a public edict, Pope Innocent in the Catholic Church put out a public edict saying that from now on, well, let's change the structure of what constitutes a slave. See, prior to that time in history, from the beginning of the earth up until 1488, you could only be a slave if you were a victim of three things. One, if you were a victim of religious prosecution. Two, if you were a victim of indebtedness, owed some indebtedness to somebody that could enslave you. Or three, you were a prisoner of war. Those are only three ways that a person could be a slave up to 1488. But Pope Innocent's public edict say, hey, let's go one more step. You know those 16 blacks we had in the Vatican from 1445 up to 1488, they were fantastic helpers. They were good assistants. They were good slaves. We could use them without paying them. So that point is, let's put in another fact. Let's base slavery on also another, a fourth factor called skin color. At that point, for the first time in history, race started. That's when racism came into existence. I'm sure, let's say, started racism, because between 1488 and I'm going to take another 2 seconds on this. Between 1488 and let's say 1492, Columbus discovered America. He found all this land in the West. He came back and told Spain and Portugal that they had found all this land around the world. And guess what? They said, that's a good factor. And we got all these people now we can use as slaves. So we might have a new way of trying to prosper. Because right now, Russia in the 1500s was undergoing massive destruction. They were being overrun with crime, diseases, famine, hunger. And the entire European continent was going down the toilet. They said, but now we got a lot of land in the West called the Americas. And we got all these people could be slaves. A contest started. 9 European nations, let's put the two of them together. And let's put it together and go and start a race, a competition between European nations trying to get to Americas to build it and get wealth. And it created a thing called capitalism. Capitalism means own and control the land, the tools, the resources, and use other people's labor to enrich yourselves. They use blacks to be the enrichment device. And so everybody, a race started. They went to the West to develop the Western world. And that was all 9 European nations. Racism started off as a competitive relationships based on economics, using black people. And that race continued until 1859. But in 1859, right before the Civil War, the race had ended because now whites around the world had captured and owned and controlled everything of importance. And that when the race ended, they took the word race, Herbert, this is important for you. They took the word, to answer your question, they took the word race. I mean, race, R-A-C, racing, what they've been competing, a contest, just like a horse racing, football, I mean, a bicycle race. They were no longer competing because they owned everything. So they took the E off a race, R-A-C. They took a suffix called I-S-M, and they took the E off and stuck I-S-M on the end of race to make it racism. Racism, that's where racism came from. Racism is a competitive relationship between groups of people that are competing for the ownership and control of wealth, power, and resources so they can use it to shut down a weaker group down. That's what racism is. It has nothing to do with language. It has nothing to do with Arabs, Asians, Hispanics, women, gays. It's strictly between blacks and whites. They're misusing it now to confuse and misdirect black folk and what racism is.
Wow, Doc. I'm going to tell you now that you just dropped almost the atomic bomb. But this is a great place now for us to take, you know, in New York, we call it the pause for the cause. And so what I'm going to do is we're going to take a little pause for the cause. And then we come back, want to talk about some of your books, how people can contact you, and some of the things that you're doing to move along the agenda. So we'll be right back, folks. Hey, Achievers, Dr. Herbert Harris here. Did you know that audiobooks are one of the most effective ways to learn about new ideas, new experiences, and new places to go. Audible, an Amazon company, is offering our listeners a free 30-day trial to get two free audiobooks to listen to whenever you want, in your car, in your home. Go to our website, www.herbertharris.com. Click on the Audible icon and get your free trial. That's www.herbertharris.com. Click on the Audible icon and get your free trial. You are now tuned in to the Millionaire Mentorship Show with Dr. Herbert Harris on Bishani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. We are available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and anywhere a mobile device is available. All right, folks, this is Dr. Herbert Harris continuing our interview with Dr. Claude Anderson. So, Doc, maybe you could tell our listeners how they can contact you and get your books and learn more about what you're doing.
Okay, and I thank you for that, and I, Herbert, and I'm depending on you. I want blacks, every black in America, to understand these issues because they got to move quickly because we're getting ready to get buried alive. And everything, all the answers that they're looking for are in those books, Black Labor, White Wealth. Which shows you where, how the all the wealth and power was maldistributed. They show you every trick, technique, law, custom the whites use to put everything into their hands and lock you out. And follow that was Powernomics. Powernomics was designed to show you that white racism is not perfect. You can beat it. And the third and fourth book was called Dirty Little Secrets about Black History and its heroes. You need those two books. And the last book is called The Black History Reader. Those five books will show you how to beat and compete, okay? Now, you can get those books by going to the Powernomics, Powernomics, powernomics.com. And go there, and right now we got a special across this country and around the world. It's called a library pack. They can go to that website and order that library pack for $99 and get a free DVD with it. And if they don't have this library pack in their home or in their school, then they don't have a home in the school. They'll never understand these issues. And there's no other books on earth that will show you what the issues are and how to deal with them. Tell them to go to the library, powernomics.com, and order those library packs for $99. It'll be sent to them, and we're going to organize what we call across America called a Us Too movement, where blacks, this is our year. We got to organize on the Us Too movement. And once they read those books, I want every one of them to hit the streets and start pushing back against these issues, push back against the Me Too movement. The Me Too movement, that's a white woman's movement. And then somehow they got black women silly identifying with it and also got these gender groups, gays, midgets, humpbacks, lesbians, and transsexuals, everybody. That movement started in the 1850s to compete with blacks. Throughout history, white women always wanted to compete with blacks and stay ahead of black folk. That's why white women during slavery were opposed to black slaves being freed. White women would co-own, co-control, co-influence, and inherited 100% of everything the white man had. You're going to learn how to push back against the Me Too movement with our Us movement. You got to learn about this whole thing about immigration and how immigration is a negative for black folk. It came into existence in 1790. The year after the Constitution was approved, they enacted what's called the First Nationalization and Immigration Law, which says everybody can come to America under what they call the American Dream and get what I told you earlier. Then get free land and free black labor. That's capitalism. They can use that and enrich themselves. That's why all these immigrants coming to America today, they're not coming here for liberty and freedom. They're coming here to enrich themselves off of what black folk cannot get. Black folk were the primary foundation of wealth building in this nation. And so make sure they start calling themselves in the future the exceptional people. Mm-hmm. Blacks are exceptional people. You're the only people that never got anything. Mm. So go to those books and get them, put the Powernomics, and we'll send them to you. And you get all the information I'm giving you now and plus millions of ideas. But we got a movement. I want every black to join that movement. I'm talking fast, but I got a lot of things I want them to do. And I'll lay out the things, strategies for them. I want them to hit the streets and start pushing back on immigration, pushing for reparations, pushing against this immigration, pushing against this Us Too women's movement. You got a lot of things to start fighting for, but you got to need some black leadership. So start organizing. We need a new generation of black leaders. The old black leaders they're betraying you. They're now double agents. If you see any black you see on TV, on the news, or any of the channels, NBC, ABC, whatever it is, those any black face you see on a regular basis, those are traitors. They're selling you out. They're not promoting black issues. They would never say anything positive about black folk or make a black issue a positive issue to fight back and compete in our society.
Mm. You know, Doc, when you were saying that, I was in your book, Dirty Little Secrets, you were talking about the Virginia Governor Spotswood and how when the country, in the early years of the country, when they were giving out land, that the amount of land depended on the number of slaves you had. So the more slaves that you had, the more land you could get. Maybe you could elaborate on that, because that really translates slavery into direct economic benefits. Slavery and land are almost equivalent.
You're absolutely right. And see, but they, as I told you, when the race ended in 1859, they switched it from being an economic issue and tried to make it a biological issue. Race tried to make race a biological issue. Then by the 1960s, they switched it from being a biological issue and tried to make it whether or not you like somebody or they're friends with you. But that had nothing to do with racism. But go back to your point, though. Once they set up the Constitution, they said the wealth in this country and capitalism and democracy will be based on what land you own. And so George Washington started off by saying immediately, I want 100,000 acres of free land, and got 100,000 acres of free land. Thomas Jefferson says, if you're going to give George Washington 100,000 acres of free land, I want 100,000 acres of free land. And then and here comes Patrick Henry that wrote through in the history book saying, give me liberty, give me death. He said, if you give those two guys 100,000 acres of free land, I want 65,000 acres of free land. And then for every white coming to America, as soon as they put foot on the soil in America, they got 650 acres of free land. And then plus, and for just for setting foot, then plus they get another 150 acres of free land for every slave they own. So after a very short period of time, this nation transferred they transferred 2 billion acres of free lands in the hands of whites. Now, that's where your wealth went. Now, here's the wealth. While you're locked in box in America right now, you haven't got a snowball's chance unless you start reading these books and understanding. When they gave them 2 billion acres of free land, that's where all the value is in that land. Not only in the land itself, but also in the timber on that land, the gold, the chrome, the bauxite, the oil, the gas, the copper, everything in that land, the minerals also. And that's where your wealth is. And that wealth has been doubling and tripling in value every 20 years. You understand what I'm saying? So that's why whites now in America own and control 99% of everything in value in this society. Black people only control less than 0.5% or 1%. That means at the end of slavery, that the average white person had 3,500 times more wealth than any black person. It has changed very little. You cannot compete and survive only 0.5% of something of the wealth and the power between Boston and San Diego today. You own nothing. You own absolutely nothing, because everything is buried in the land and the wealth keeps multiplying. That's why you got almost 600 white multi-billionaires.
Wow. And so now then, this issue, is that what you address in your Powernomics book? You were talking about that. This is kind of the way to address that issue through that Powernomics concept.
That's right. You can beat them. See, if you read those books, you can understand how the game is being played. And that's by going in right now and developing a very strong sense of community. Then that's a sense of community. Then you build yourself some physical communities. That's why Detroit should have never allowed themselves to be integrated and gentrified. That's why I tried to build a black business district in the city of Detroit. Between Grand River, south of Illinois, I had 40 acres there to build your black business district. But somehow they got that confused with African Town, which was a totally different thing. And the whites in the suburbs knew that. And they shut it down so that you all would not have a black business district. And all and everything of value in Detroit is between the river and 8 Mile Road. Those whites are going to shut you down in that city. You're not going to own a damn thing. That's why 92% of everything that city right now is owned by Arabs. 92% of all the gas stations. You got 146 gas stations. White Arabs own 144. They own your grocery stores, gas stores, party stores, liquor stores, and discount stores. You own nothing. And so you haven't got a chance in Detroit.
Now, how are they able to come here and get such an advantage?
Because they got advantage because your civil rights leaders have screwed you up. because you see, they come here and get advantages. Any immigrant coming to this country right now, you got about 20 million illegals and illegals in the country. Guess what? They come in, they get 5 advantages over you. Mark this down on your pad. 1, they come to this country, they use identity theft. They come in pretending somehow that they're equal to you under the guise of racism. So first thing they do, they call themselves a minority. They get credit for being a minority. That's 1 step. 2, they get another point over you by coming in with a religion, like whether it's Arab, Islam, anything else. They get another point. Now they got 2 points over you. 3, they come in here and they declare themselves to have a language problem, a difference. That's why Hispanics have been able to pick up all these radio stations and TV stations over you. They say, well, we have to have Spanish stations. They have 3 points over you. 4, all those immigrants coming to the country, all of them are classified as whites. Everybody coming to the country, people don't know that. The Arabs, Asians, Hispanics, and Indians and Latinos are classified as whites by the federal classification category. So that's four over you. And 5, they come in because, again, they come in as a class. And they play network, and they come in and gain capital by coming in, the government subsidizes them. They get 5 advantages that you cannot get because you're going around talking about you're an African American and you kill yourself, you shoot yourself. You are native black Americans.
Mm. Woo, doc, I tell you, when we look at it like that, so this whole immigration, all this DACA and this whole immigration experience that's going on is really undermining the black community and black economics.
It started undermining you in 1790. Mm-hmm. But now, right now, you've been killed off all these years. That's why you haven't gained anything. That's why you're in the same position you were in for the last 100 years. But what's going to happen? They're getting ready to bury you now. And with these new immigrants coming in, you might as well kiss your rear ends goodbye. They legalize all these other immigrants. So here's what you must tell blacks to do right quick. You tell them to get out and start protesting that any more immigrants come to this country because it's illegal and unconstitutional based on the 13th and 14th Amendment. Which says that the 13th Amendment says that black folk must be treated in all manners similar to the way whites are treated. And if whites are not being hurt by immigration, then blacks are, then that's a violation of the law. The 14th Amendment says that every level of government must exercise all necessary means to lift the legacies and of slavery off the shoulders of black folk. They say anything about lifting off of midgets, humpback, peg leg, one-eyed people with hemorrhoids. So they're misusing the 13th Amendment and 14th Amendment. So you must start pushing back against immigration. Then the second thing you must do is say, we're going to demand if you keep bringing in these immigrants, to put blacks into a protected class, just like they had immediately after slavery, when they had the Freedmen's Bureau. See, that's why Indians went into a protected class. They don't get hurt by immigrants coming in the country. They got their own territory. And the government provides every Indian through the Indian Freedmen's Bureau with $27,000 each every year. Black folk were originally supposed to be put into a protected class. That's what the Harvest Institute fights for. That's what Power Numbers is fighting for. You are supposed to be in a protected class where you can have your own business and your own land, and people cannot come in and take from you and mistreat you and abuse you, castrate and lynch you, and not deny you businesses. But black folk don't push back because you don't have any leadership. That's what the Harvest Institute is about. That's what my books are about.
Wow, Doc, I tell you, this time went by so fast as I listen to you talk, it's an insight that's not being heard anywhere else. As I listen to you talk and read your books, this is an insight that's not being heard anywhere else. Nobody is speaking this type of message, this type of truth to power.
Well, they're not going to do it because most whites don't know it, and most of your black leaders don't know it. And secondly, the few black leaders that do know it, they're scared to death. They're hiding out. They're scared. They're hiding behind a tree and under the ground, on the basement, saying it's not safe to speak out in the interest of black folk. So you take them, tell our people, buy those damn books and read them, and make sure that every school is now buying those books for those black kids in Detroit. The charter schools as well as the public schools should have all 5 of my books there. Those kids are using those as Bibles to learn to get through school so they can compete when they get out.
Wow. Well, Doc, I sure thank you for this interview, this insight. It's going to heal and help a lot of people. Is there any one last thought you'd like to leave with the world about, you know, the things that you've been working on for so long?
Right. Well, that's what we tell them to go to www.powernumbers.com and get those books immediately. And always remember, they are exceptional people. There's nobody on the earth has been mistreated, maltreated like black folk in America. And then rather than call themselves African-American, they call themselves African-American, they shoot themselves in the head. They're not African-Americans. When they came in this nation, they are separate from anything else. They are native black Americans. And therefore, and if you call yourself an African-American, whites will say, well, we didn't do anything to Africa, but Native Americans, they owe black folk. This country owes black folk. Black folk are the people that built the roads, the highway, the bridges, the canals. They picked the cotton, the rice, the indigo. They did and built the schools. And blacks have done everything. Blacks are the most patriotic people in this nation. Call yourself Native Blacks, not African, not Jamaicans, not Cuban. You are black, Native Black Americans, and demand that you be put into a protected class and given reparations immediately. And if you don't, we're going to start boycotting all the white businesses and all these immigrant things coming into the country.
Wow. Dr. Claude Anderson, I tell you, thank you so much for this powerful message, this powerful interview, and we're going to do our best to get it out there and let it touch as many people as possible.
Well, I'm going to call the Power Numbers Corporation. Did any of the people at the Herbert broadcast come buy those power packs? And if you're not, I'm coming to Detroit and get you. You know what a country whipping is?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm coming in with a big light, a switch, a trillium to look for you. If those blacks in your orbit are broadcasting, don't buy those books, I'm coming look for. I'm gonna hold you accountable.
Well, all right, Doc. I sure appreciate you. Thank you so much. And we're gonna have to do another interview in the near future.
That's a promise. And I love you. And you take care of yourself now.
Love you too, Doc. Be blessed. Oh.
You are now tuned into the Millionaire Mentorship Show with Dr. Herbert Harris on Bishani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. We are available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and anywhere a mobile device is available. See you next week, folks, and tune in at any time to hear the Millionaire Mentorship Show with thoughts that can change your life.
Millionaire Mentorship. Millionaire Mentorship. The Millionaire Mentorship Show with Dr. Herbert Harris on Bishani Radio and iHeart Radio.
On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BishaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.